This morning we're going to have a little video about our auction, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. And so let's begin there before we settle into our Sunday morning service. All right, now, welcome again. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, also affectionately known as WUF. Whether you are with us in the sanctuary or watching on screen, we are so happy to be sharing this time with you. Regardless of where you've come from or what you've done or what you've never done, you are so very welcome here, regardless of whether you grew up in a religious community or never entered a church before today. Regardless of your age, your abilities, the color of your skin, or whatever was your first language. No matter whom you love or how you identify your gender, we are delighted to share time with you this morning. I'm Salima Mawson. My pronouns are she and her. And for those with visual impairment, I am one of our more elderly members, 84 to be exact. I'm white, just under 5 feet tall, and a bit on the chubby side, with dark but graying hair, wearing reading glasses, and a black-gray top. But most importantly, it is my privilege to be part of this service with you all this morning. So, now I have greeted you, and let us all take a few minutes to greet each other. So our service this morning is focused on welcoming our newest neighbors, asylum seekers and refugees, immigrants. I've asked our guest speaker to light the chalice, but instead we're going to have our own little Isaac do that for us. And he's going to light the chalice as we speak together our responsive reading called This House. What was to be on the screen is a responsive reading called This House. What I guess I will do is I will read my part, and then I will read your part and ask you to repeat it with me. Maybe that will work. Let's see. So as we light our chalice this morning, may its flame remind us that this house is for the ingathering of all nature, human and otherwise. A welcoming space that embraces both struggle and celebration, that guards the dignity and value of every person, including children and babies, each one loved and respected exactly as they are. This is your part. This house offers a platform for free voice and the mutually respectful expression of conflicts of opinion. It is the house of truth seeking. No, that's my part. Where scientists can encourage devotion to their quest in community with humanists, pagans, and spiritual seekers alike. Your part. It is a house of art and music. Where our shared ministry is enhanced by new ideas and creativity. It is a house of prophecy, outrunning times past and times present with its ever-evolving vision of growth and progress. This house is both the cradle for our dreams and the workshop that brings our dreams to life. May the flame that we have lit this morning burn bright and long. And now our opening hymn, Come, Come, Whoever You Are. Our song leaders will be Karen Stratton and Spencer Ehrman. This is a round. And I'm going to let Karen speak too.
Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no care of despair. Come yet again, come. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come yet again, come.
Let's speed it up just a little bit.
Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer,
whoever you are,
wanderer, whoever you are, wanderer, whoever you are,
ages story. And thank you, Liz Hart, for leading us.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Liz. I'm the Director of Religious Education here at WOOF. My pronouns are largely unimportant, and today I'm going to read a story by Marguerite Roers. It's called Stepping Stones, and it's about refugees. Rama, wake up, the rooster crowed. Every morning when we still lived at home. From my warm bed, I listened as Mama prepared breakfast. Bread, yogurt, juicy red tomatoes from our garden. When I was little, not so long ago, my brother Sami and friends and I played on sunbaked soil. We laughed, ran across rocks and sand, free as birds. When Papa came in from the fields, we would sit for a time under the orange tree and tell stories of our ancestors. In that not-so-distant memory, we were free. Free to play, free to go to school, free to buy fruit and vegetables at the market, free to laugh and chat, drink tea with neighbors, always 3 cups. But then was then, and this is now. Back then, Jado, my grandfather, fished. Papa worked in the fields. Mama sewed silk scarves for me and my dolls, wrapped in silk and hugs. I didn't know our lives would change forever. But Jado said we weren't really free. If we weren't allowed to sing our songs, to dance our dances, to pray our prayers of our choice, are we truly free? Then war came to our country. Life in our village changed. Nothing was as it had been. Soon there was not enough food. Rama, share this bowl of soup with Sami. I didn't know then that Mama would go hungry, but we still had Mama's hugs and Jado's arms to hold us. Then the birds stopped singing. People began to leave our village, first a trickle, then a stream, across dusty fields under a burning sun, a steam driven by hope. Mothers, fathers, children, seeking a better place, a better life. A river of strangers in search of a place to be free, to live and laugh, to love again, in search of a place where bombs did not fall, where people did not die on their way to the market. A river of people in search of peace. At first, when our neighbors left, I didn't mind. I had Papa and Mama and Jado and Sami. I still had friends. We waved goodbye, not knowing they wouldn't come back. But when bombs fell too close to our home, Mama and Papa became frightened for all of us. I hid my face in Mama's lap and I cried, even though I'm a big kid. One day, Jado told Sami and me that it was time to join the river of people, time to leave all that we knew. That night, I laid in bed and cried because I knew I would never again hear the crow of the rooster or the creak of the gate or the bleat of our goats. I lay awake and listened to the wind, wondering if the moon rises the same way in other places. Sami and I said goodbye to the flowers in our yard, to our goat, to the soil we called home. Then we walked. We walked and walked and walked. I tried to match steps with Jado's long strides. I tried to hold Mama's hand. But she carried blankets, a bundle of clothes. I carried only memories in my heart. We walked, sometimes alone, but mostly with others, everyone fleeing the war and running away from the bombs. Papa carried little Sami and more on his back. And when I grew so tired and cried, Papa told me that we were walking towards a bright new future. We walked to the end of the earth, and when we reached it, there was the sea. We set sail on waves of hope and prayer. I was frightened as the waves battered our little boat, and not everyone made it safely across. We said prayers for those whose journey ended at sea. When we arrived on land once again, Mama and Papa planted seeds to grow flowers, to reach those who did not reach freedom. And on we walked. Tired. I was so tired. My feet felt like rocks, the rocks on which we walked. My legs were like trees rooted to the soil. But on we walked. And now we walked across lands free from war, free from guns and bombs, free from fear. Now we walked in hope. At last we came to our future. New neighbors welcomed us with open arms. I heard their voices, but I didn't understand their words. But when I saw their smiles, I knew what those words meant. Stay, they said. Stay with us. You'll be safe now. And they shared what they had, clothes, food, even a new doll. And we have a new home now, a home with new sounds and new smells, with smiles and people who help us. Will this always be home? Will we go back someday? The lucky ones, they call us. New memories, new hopes, new dreams, not of war, but of peace.
our children, our future. And now, a video from the International Rescue Committee.
What comes to mind when you hear the word refugee?
That's a really hard question.
I get it. You need some inspiration.
I think they're brave.
Resilient.
Hardworking.
Those are good ones. But don't forget about our influence on culture. I mean, look at this food.
We're looking for safety.
Poverty. Mazloom.
Sure, that's one part of the story, and an important part. But it's not the whole picture. Let me show you what I mean. We are lawmakers.
And the first refugee to serve in the Colorado State House.
We are raising our families, all while keeping the world informed.
Salam Zahra Shahid Islam Shamaradaba.
We create art on stages small and large. We are Oscar winners and dream makers. So yes, refugees are
innovative
people in need,
heroic.
There's a lot more to it than that. There are more displaced people in the world than ever before because of conflict, climate change, and economic turmoil. But that's not stopping us from shaping policies, art, traditions, and futures in countless ordinary and extraordinary ways.
Refugees are change makers. As I mentioned earlier, this morning service is all about welcoming those change makers, our newest neighbors. All over the world, there are thousands upon thousands of displaced persons escaping from violence, hunger, persecution, and the increasing natural disasters brought about by climate change. As you just heard, there are now more than ever before. Our guest speaker this morning are two remarkable young women, Kellyanne Cameron, Natalie Lerner. They are part of the boots on the ground efforts of Emerge, the interfaith movement for immigrant justice, to respond to the growing crisis exacerbated by lack of state and social support for recently arrived immigrants. We'll hear from them shortly, with time for questions and comments. But in the meantime, here are some words from a British poet, Brian Bilstrom, titled simply, Refugees. The world can be looked at another way. Do not be so stupid to think that a place should only belong to those who are born there. These are people just like us. It is not okay to say, build a wall to keep them out. Instead, let us share our countries, share our homes, share our food. They cannot go back to where they came from. We should make them welcome here. They are not cutthroats and thieves with bombs up their sleeves, layabouts and loungers, chancers and scroungers. We need to see them for who they really are. Should life have dealt a different hand, these haggard faces would belong to you or me. So do not tell me they have no need of our help. I'm wondering if Kara might accompany us on the guitar for this music. This is a song you're going to love if you don't already know it. There's a river flowing in my soul.
There's a river.
As a faith community, there is indeed a river flowing in our collective soul. And as we navigate the complex currents that carry us forward into a world of uncertainty, we often feel unsettled and anxious, restless, even fearful. What works for me during those times is an inner nudge toward gratitude, a quick review of what I know to be true in this moment and what I am most grateful for in this moment. At my age, just waking up in the morning can be a good start. And so we come to a part in our service when we settle in a little deeper, become a little quieter, a little more reflective, a little more thoughtful. As we prepare to receive this morning's financial offerings, we think about the circle of gratitude in giving. What is it right here, right now, that you are grateful for? And what is it that you have to give? It may not be money. Your generosity of spirit may manifest in other ways, and your gratitude may look way different than mine. Whatever it is, I invite you now to open your heart to it. Speak it aloud, if you like, and then take a moment to just hold it close. Thank you all for your generous offerings this morning. Let us speak together our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. I just want to say, Betsy, we're very glad to see you. We're glad you're here. We're glad you're okay. And we've been improvising. Back in the day, that is before COVID, the phenomenon that turned everything on its head, our time for sharing joys and sorrows involved the lighting of candles and the speaking of words. The pandemic, of course, reduced our Sunday services to being broadcast strictly online, which meant they were wide open to anyone, anywhere in the world. The spoken sharing of private matters of the heart had to stop. And now, still, because we continue to live stream our services, we initiated a practice of silent sharing, dropping a stone or two into water that symbolizes community. This morning, we're going to experiment with a hybrid practice. If you are moved to share a special joy or sorrow by coming forward and placing a stone in the water, you will have the choice of doing so silently or with a single statement, such as, I'm grieving the loss of a friend, or this week we closed on our new home, or my first grandchild was born last night, or whatever. We'll see what happens. So here's the plan. Kara Magaril will gift us with Spencer LaJoy's beautiful Plowshares Prayer, after which you are welcome to come forward in the usual manner. And when everyone has returned to their seats, we will maintain some additional moments of silence and conclude by singing together, The River is Flowing. Kara.
Each day, and I pray the meat flows in your hand. Oh. against you and your word. I pray that this prayer is a plowshare of swords.
And now from the Episcopal Migration Ministries, a video that will introduce...
At Episcopal Migration Ministries, our goal is to welcome and support individuals forced to flee home in search of safety and hope. Some may think refugees and asylum seekers are the same, but they are quite different. Refugees were initially asylum seekers, fleeing war, violence, or persecution, and have crossed an international border to find safety. They have been given legal refugee status and can receive government support. When someone seeks asylum, they're seeking protection against returning to their country. The asylum process can take years to conclude. If asylum is granted, the asylee will have the opportunity to live and work legally in the U.S. and is eligible for certain benefits. Until then, they are not protected. At Episcopal Migration Ministries, we want to do everything we can to help those seeking protection and safety, so no one ever feels alone. Help support the Ministry of Welcome. Learn more at EpiscopalMigrationMinistries.org.
Kellyanne? Let's give Kellyanne and and Natalie Lerner a warm welcome.
Good morning. I'm Natalie. Thank you so much for having us here today. We have contacted Tracy many times looking for support for new arrivals in the Portland area. So we're really happy to have the opportunity to be here today and speak with you about this issue.
So our connection with Tracy is I was raised UU in Spokane with Tracy's older kids in a family that highly valued hospitality as part of recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of all people, as well as promoting justice and compassion in our world. So while I was growing up, my parents, who are middle income and stably housed, like we are now, shared our home with community members from the UU of Spokane waiting to get into affordable housing, as well as young adults, bicyclists, people in between things, and seasonal workers. And that's been part of the inspiration for our hospitality now. After several years of organizing and working in immigrant justice and solidarity spaces, we've heard a lot about the need for sponsors or for asylum seekers specifically, and especially queer and trans folks. And then when we moved back to Portland from Texas in 2020, we knew we wanted to find a way to sponsor somebody or offer that hospitality, which was a little complicated to explain to prospective landlords.
But luckily, we were able to find a three-bedroom house, and we have some community support from our communities to help us afford to have an extra bedroom in our home to be able to share it with asylum seekers. And, like, it was sort of chaotic. As soon as we moved into this house, Kellyanne's sister was there the day we moved in, and then 2 weeks later we got a call that somebody we'd been saying we were going to sponsor, and we're sort of slowly planning for her entry, had crossed the border and was heading to us that day. So she was the first person who stayed with us, and since then we've had a series of folks staying in our home, but most recently, as I think a lot of people know, there have been a lot of folks who have been bused from particularly Texas to northern cities. And while people aren't being bused to Portland, many people have had Portland put on their paperwork by ICE, like randomly at the border, or they've just heard that Portland's a good place to go. And so we ended up getting connected with a group in D.C. that is, because a lot of folks are going there, and as folks have been coming to Portland, they put us in touch with people, and the most recent person we hosted in our home was somebody who had a friend here, but then he couldn't stay with his friend, and he ended up living with us for 6 months.
And he was bused to D.C. because the bus said Washington on it, and he knew his friend lived in Vancouver, Washington. So he got there and was like, where's Vancouver? And they were like, oh, no.
Which, chaotically, actually, the person who stayed with us originally thought that we lived in Portland, Maine, because her friends all lived in New York. And she was like, oh, it's a quick bus ride to New York.
Yeah, she's like, I'm going to get a bus to visit my friends in New York. And we're like, oh
a bus. But anyway, that's the lesson we've learned, to really clarify where we live with people. But more recently, there have been a lot of folks in the position of the person who lived with us who've ended up here, such that the state has ended up funding a hotel in Northeast Portland that for almost the past year people have been living in. And while there's been a lot of really, it's provided a really valuable landing place for a lot of people. There's a lot of services that people can access there. There's also been a lot of issues with the hotel, mostly that there has not been an exit plan, and so it reached capacity really quickly, and then folks have friends and family who are coming here to reunite with the people living in the hotel, and there's nowhere for them to go. So we've been really involved with the Emerge, the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, as well as other organizations, and trying to advocate for a longer-term solution so that the state of Oregon is more welcoming to people who are coming here fleeing violence. And most recently, we submitted a letter to the Multnomah County because they've been doing, as folks may have been tracking, they've been voting on a lot of different housing-related money, and we're advocating for improved mainstream housing services for this set of people.
Yeah, and a recognition that there's some funding and support set aside for the people who are currently in the hotel, but again, it's been at capacity since around March. So there's hundreds of people on the wait list and who haven't been able to access the hotel who are literally turned onto the street and told to call 211, but most of them don't have a U.S. SIM card, so that's pretty challenging to do, and they're up north, so they can't walk to a shelter. There's not a lot of support, so we and community supporters, community members have been trying to fill the gap as far as those folks and providing emergency housing and then getting them to the services that are available to them.
So we collected to share with the county some testimonies from people who've been either evicted or turned away from the hotel, and we wanted to share some of those with you today. So here's one testimony from a young man who we've gotten to know. I come from Venezuela with my wife and my one-year-old daughter. We decided to leave the country in search of a better future. We decided to come to Portland, Oregon through a friend, but it turns out that when we arrived here in July, he dropped us off at the airport. With faith in God, we had nowhere to sleep, and we spent the night on the street. Until the next day, we went to a hotel in search of any help to stop sleeping on the street. They gave us a series of phone numbers, and one of them was Natalie's phone number, and we continue to thank her till today to give us hospitality. They just have ended up staying with a community member. Since we have not been lucky enough to be accepted in to stay at the migrant shelter, even though we have been on the wait list since May. Until today, they still haven't called us for a room. My goals here are to get a good job, to give my daughter the best, and to be able to help other people who really need it. As I said today, this family is now staying with a community member host who we were lucky enough to connect with. She's an empty nester and has a little space on the second floor of her house. But she's going to move in a couple months, and so they have to find another option unless they get off a shelter wait list, which even the regular shelters, the wait lists are months and months long.
So, yeah. As this sort of illustrates, and again, as you've probably heard, a lot of asylum seekers are experiencing the opposite of hospitality and welcome across the country. I'm sure you've seen pictures of folks in New York sleeping outside. Similar situation, there's a hotel, it's at capacity. There's a lack of money and political will to support these newcomers, and often part of why we had the little video is people get confused about refugees versus asylum seekers. There's a lot of different immigration statuses. Asylum seekers generally don't have work authorization for up to 18 months or sometimes even more, so they can't work over the table. They can't get jobs quickly. It's impossible to pay rent if you don't have a job. It's hard to get rent if you have a job under the table because you can't show pay stubs. They don't receive resettlement services like at Catholic Charities or different types of assistance that are available to refugees or people who can receive some special programs, of which, you know, there are many, many, and it's complicated. But and it's particularly for those who are not reuniting with friends or family here in the U.S. who are already stable. They really don't have any support to navigate a new country and no safe place to land if they don't get here in time to get into a shelter. So, yeah, that's what we've been doing. We've covered some of this.
But yeah.
And the wait lists for the mainstream shelter are multiple months long. So they'll be asked to wait to talk to a lawyer, to wait to get housing assistance, to wait to get food assistance, wait to get on OHP, all of these things, because there's just huge demand in general in our community among houseless folks and against people who need immigration support.
So in our efforts, we've really found, because both of us speak Spanish and most of the people who we've been doing immigration organizing with are Spanish speakers, most of the folks we've ended up supporting or being in touch with are Venezuelan, although a few people from other parts of Latin America. But there's people from all over the world who are coming to Portland. There's a really large community of Afghan folks living in the hotel right now. There's people from Cameroon. There's people from Haiti, really all over, who have a diverse set of needs. But currently, we're really trying to think about how do we connect with all of the organizations and people supporting folks and really think about a model of solidarity rather than charity. You know, we're not sharing our home or doing this work because we think we're better or that we're guilty, but more just that we have something and we can share it with folks. And we would hope if we ever had the misfortune of having to flee that people would welcome us into their homes as well.
Yeah, and we know that with, you know, at least climate change, but also escalating issues around the world and even within the United States, more and more people are seeking refuge in Oregon, and we just don't have a structure at this point set up to receive people. So we're advocating for a better structure, for more support, and also in the meantime, filling in the gaps. So related to a gap, we have another testimony from another family that we'd like to share with you. This is from a woman. She says, "My husband and I and our four children have been in this country for 34 days. This was about a week ago. Our first night was spent in a hotel, thanks to some people who are volunteers and help immigrants, to whom we are very grateful, since thanks to them, our four children did not spend the night on the street. Our first challenge was communication, because we did not have knowledge of the language and did not have the economic means to buy a telephone or to use a translator. Being able to come to this country is a blessing for my family, and even more so for our children, since they will have many opportunities, such as education, health, and food. These opportunities, unfortunately, they could not have in our country. We hoped to have a little more support to be able to have stability for our children, but the reality is, as immigrants, we have many barriers to achieving that. One of the fears or barriers when arriving in a new country as immigrants is not being accepted and facing situations such as xenophobia, discrimination, and poor housing conditions. Our priority at this moment is to be able to have a home or stable place for our children. It is something extremely urgent for us to give them stability, since we have enrolled them in school here, but we have had to move around a lot to be able to keep a roof over their heads to sleep. We have also already changed schools for them. We are concerned about their emotional stability. We do not think it is healthy for them to change schools three times in such a short time. They are adapting to a new language, rules, customs, and we believe that it could affect them." And for this family, they were able to get into a hotel shelter after staying with a community member for about a week and being put up by like generous donations in a hotel for 10 days. But it's not clear what kinds of support they're going to get, how specific it is to their unique, you know, immigration status, and how long they'll be able to stay there.
So obviously housing is like the big issue we're talking about. But as we've mentioned and as some of the testimonies have mentioned, and as you all know, people need way more than just a place to sleep. So people also often come with literally just the clothing that they're wearing and maybe a cell phone. But they don't have additional clothes. They don't have good access to food. They don't have a phone that works in the U.S. You know, if they have small children, they don't have a car seat to be able to have their kid in a car, or a hop card to be able to take the bus here, or anything like that. So there's a huge amount of need, both in terms of like items as well as money that people have, and we often use the Emerge Sanctuary Fund to try to cover those expenses, as well as, you know, we're members of Havra Shalom, a synagogue in the area, and we're constantly emailing their sanctuary list to ask for random items that people need. And really, the community right now is filling in the gap for these folks who are currently falling through the cracks. So partially, we're here today to ask you all to consider if yourself or others in your networks would be interested in hosting people or supporting them with interpretation or giving them a ride places, being on a list, you know, to reach out to if there's items we need in terms of donation, like secondhand clothing or children's stuff, or things like that.
So yeah, thanks for inviting us here today. I think we probably have time for questions and answers. We'll also hang out a little bit after. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can also always ask Tracy. She has our cell phones and our emails. And Salima also has our contacts. So
yeah.
Yeah. The time.
I'm going to just do us one better here and say that any of you here today that are interested in getting involved in this kind of a project, please come to our social justice community meeting the second Monday of October. We're going to talk about this, and we would welcome your input. And we are going to also propose that our first quarter of the new year be donated, or donate the basket be donated to this group. So there we are. If we're willing to stay a little bit over time, we've got time for two or three questions or comments. Anybody wants to do that? Oops, now I took your microphone.
That's okay.
We can do that one. There.
We'll let Spencer pass the mic.
Thanks. Thanks, Spencer. Excuse me. So I just had a few basic questions. Like, to get in touch with your organization, what is it? Like, what's the website, the name again? How do you spell it? What's the baseline?
When you got your order of service, there were some colored pages out there, and that is a whole list of resources available.
Okay.
All the information is there.
And can you talk? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say also, the name is the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, and if you just Google that, the website for the organization should come up.
And also, they're supporting us, but we're a very, like, ad hoc, jumping in where we can, loose collection of people. It emerges kind of around it because it's been a lot of faith folks who've been able to step in. There's a Catholic sister who's been involved, some people from Nyor, Havara, obviously. And Tracy, I know someone in your congregation has stepped in with someone. So emerges a great contact, and also just us, which you can get from Salima or at the meeting or Tracy.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And I also was wondering about, like, Portland rent, like, the laws around occupancy in a home. Like, do you run any risks when you have somebody stay with you for months at a time and then perhaps want them to leave and you can't get them to leave?
Yeah, this is a great question and one that we're currently kind of working through. I will say we have not ever encountered anyone who has been unwilling to leave when they've been asked to leave. And I think often, like, not having a rent-paying agreement is an important part of it. Like, if they're not paying you, they're not your tenant, they're a guest. But it's for sure something we're trying to consult more with housing lawyers around, because it is, like, there are really strong tenant protections in Portland, which is awesome, but can be complicated when you're trying to have a temporary house guest. We tend to sign with people, like, a week-to-week agreement and say, like, each week or each month, depending on the person we're evaluating, and you understand that, like, this is on that basis. But I think because we have yet to actually have to confront somebody who is unwilling to leave, we haven't, like, fully had to get into the weeds on that issue.
Yeah, but that is something we're collecting people who are hosting, because, again, it's been pretty spread out and random, and we just, the last few weeks, have started having get-togethers with hosts and being like, what kinds of support do hosts need, do guests need, and that's one of the things, like, a little more support around. We already have... Everyone kind of has their own sorts of, like, community agreements or whatever that they're doing, and we've shared that amongst each other, and the Catholic Worker House has been really helpful with that, their movement, because they, of course, also have guests for long-term, and they do experience all of these challenges and have a lot more experience, so we're hoping that they'll also, like, help us out around navigating some of that stuff. We are around.
Thank you, and we'll hopefully... have you around for a few minutes after the service?
Yes, our our airport thing. She missed her flight.
Oh, good.
We're picking up an asylum seeker. Okay.
So Kellyanne and Natalie will join us downstairs for coffee and conversation. Thank you again so much. All right. So extinguishing our chalice does not mean letting go of the flame, the warmth that is our community. Let us burn that flame brightly and warmly until we meet again. And now our closing song, Carry the Flame of Peace and Love. We'll all stand and form a circle, facing back and front.